This iPhone 5 story this week is I really found it fascinating that you wrote over the weekend, Mayo, where if you don't update your iPhone 5 by November the 3rd, 2019, your phone will literally not work anymore, like in the fullest meaning of that.
Yeah, like you hear all these brick stories, and this is quite literally a bricking.
Like, it isn't that it's obsolete, it's that it's offline.
Yeah, like the phone will turn on, but in a modern world, if a phone can't connect to the internet, it's basically useless.
If a phone can't if it can't be internet communicator.
Exactly. So this is a really funny situation. Back in like July-ish timeframe, they released security bug fix updates for iOS 9 and iOS 10. And that was to address a issue with the GPS system firmware. But there's this, the way the GPS system works, it basically counts from 0 to 1024 for each week that it's been running. And I think it started in like 1999. And if you do the math, 1024 weeks comes to 2019. So basically, all software operating systems are having to do this update so now they can be ready for when it ticks back over to 0 again, so they don't lose track of the time or whatever. And there was some funny things early this year where some car radios and stuff would be on a weird time because they haven't been updated yet. And for whatever reason, Apple's counter is like a few weeks delayed. So the actual cutoff for Apple devices having this problem is November the 3rd, not whatever the April date was. Mm-hmm. For most of Apple's older devices, installing their software update is all you needed to do. And even if you didn't install the software update, it would just mean your GPS location would stop working. The time would be all right. You'd be able to browse the web and do everything else. It's just if you went to like the Maps app, you'd only get access to Wi-Fi triangulation. You wouldn't be able to get precise GPS location until you did this update, which would sync back up with the GPS satellites. But for whatever reason, there's a particular bug issue, weirdness, oddity, whatever you want to call it, with the iPhone 5 firmware, in that when it loses this, when it runs into this problem on November the 3rd, as well as GPS not working, it also prevents internet from connecting, which means you can't receive email, you can't do iCloud backup, you can't do iMessage, you can't connect to the App Store, you can't do anything, you can't browse the web. Presumably there's some security thing where if it can't validate with the GPS timecode or whatever, then it bonks out. Basically, you just have to do the update to 10.3.4 and you'll be fine. And it's this only this like bricking issue only affects the iPhone 5. Obviously, it's quite a severe issue, so much that Apple's actually sending out special, really tall, like alert dialogues to iPhone 5 owners that remind you what you need to do. Because the problem is, if it goes past November the 3rd, you can't do an OTA update anymore because you can't connect to the internet. So you'd have to go and connect to a computer.
Mm-hmm. So the software update's been out for a while now, since the summer. Yes. But what's new this week is the alert, and it's because the date for the GPS rollover is like next week. So
yeah, and back in July, they didn't say that the iPhone 5 had this specific problem. This is new information. So back in July, there wasn't such an urgency about the iPhone 5. It was just under the list of everything else about the GPS timecodes. And for whatever reason, it's since come to light that it's more serious for that model. And obviously, there aren't many iPhone 5 users still in the world. But if you think about it, the people that still use an iPhone 5 are also probably the people that aren't right on the button of updating to the latest OS. So probably there's a reasonable number of iPhone 5 users that may be on iOS 9, maybe on iOS 10, but may not have been fastidious in getting to 10.3.4. So whatever. But it only affects iPhone 5. But for some reason, later in the week, it blew up and there were loads of like clickbaity stories that it affects all older iPhones are going to be useless in 2 days. Like, I don't know quite how that came out of it, but it did.
Yeah, I mean, your point, your coverage was really well done, of course, and it was that it's only the iPhone 5, not the 5C, which was like the same phone in a different case, but they must have fixed this by then, and with the 5S, it wasn't an issue. And also, luckily it isn't the 6 and 6 Plus generation, because that was like the highest selling in a single year phone, where it was this gigantic upgrade that happened from pent-up demand for those designs. And so with the 5, it was literally like the 10, it was sold for 1 year and that's it. Say for some exceptions in some markets, but I just found this really interesting. I mean, it's if you're a customer and this you experience this, then it's not good. Hopefully you receive the alert in time and you know how to update in time and you don't get caught offline depending on your phone and have to sort of work your way back and figure out how to update, you know, even what to do or then update through a computer when you figure out what you're supposed to do. Aside from like that happening, I didn't know about the whole GPS week number rollover thing, but after your story, you know, uncovering this behavior on the iPhone 5, I just went down the Google rabbit hole and like read so many articles on GPS rollover. and it's weird how it affects certain things. Like it'll make them think we're in the 40s or the 80s again, or like, you know, just different decades of just how the math's done, and it can just be flaws and how it was engineered to decode the time. So yeah, I find it really interesting. So I learned something new from the iPhone 5 from 2012 and 2019. But
it's also interesting just that Apple has a facility to show an alert like this, because obviously they didn't push a software update to show the alert.
Yeah, right?
Like just somewhere in the firmware or the system, there must be a way for them to have an emergency alert that tells people to, you know, update immediately. Presumably it's there if they have like a big security bug that needs a big warning, but we don't really see it used very often. This is one of the very rare occurrences where it needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So action required for iPhone 5 update to iOS 10.13.4 before November 3rd. All right. Let's talk about some of a lot of like big news stories this week that sort of happened this week, in the week that, you know, we might have hoped for an Apple event, and instead we don't get an event per se, and we don't get the March 2019 like week of announcements. But there are a few things here this week. First thing is AirPods Pro. So these were announced earlier this week through a press release on Apple Newsroom. And a day later, they were seated to some YouTube people and some press to have some hands-on experience with. And then 2 days after they were released, they started shipping and they're in stores. So you can buy them that day, and then they shipped the next day, and then they delivered the day after that. So it's been a pretty fast turnaround time, which I think is really nice. But tell me, what are AirPods Pro?
Yeah, so we obviously saw the leaks leading up to this. Rambo found the icon and stuff, and they are that design where it looks kind of like the AirPods, but with in-ear tips over the sides of them, and the stalk's a bit shorter, and then maybe they're a bit fatter, maybe, but they're overall smaller. Mm-hmm. And then you have this kind of like sailboat case because it's gone from like a more square Tic Tac box to like a wider case because the AirPods like sit differently inside them.
Yeah, someone sent me an image of like a Coleman's like ice chest, you know.
Or, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a fridge freezer, like a chest freezer type mm-hmm. thing. Yeah, but the big point here is obviously that they're in-ear design, so you get a natural noise isolation from the being able to like plug your ear, mm-hmm. your ear canal. But surprisingly, they actually do also feature active noise cancellation.
Yeah, I mean this because these were on our radars, like we expect these to be coming based on all the rumors and frankly like asset leaks from Apple. I had told you like that morning that I predict to you privately over iMessage that there's no way these things can have active noise cancellation because it's such a big hit on battery life for like Beats products that use it, so that if AirPods did it, you just have very bad battery life, and that isn't really the case. I mean it takes a hit. It's not the best battery life that you get from AirPods, but it's not terrible.
Yeah, like we haven't really got to the bottom of why this is, but say the Studio 3s, which were the first Beats products to have ANC, and then the Solo Pros, which obviously we talked about last week and you reviewed this week, mm-hmm. They have the active noise cancellation and the transparency features. And when you use them on those, the battery life quoted is cut in half. Like it goes from like 40 hours music playback to 22 hours. Mm-hmm. But for the AirPods, it goes from 5 hours, which is the same matching, you know, first and second generation AirPods. Uh-huh. It only goes from 5 hours down to 4.5 hours. So, you know, the hit to the battery life penalty is only half an hour, and that's definitely not cutting it in half. Like, we haven't quite worked out why the impact on the AirPods is so much less.
Yeah.
But it's good that it's only in a half an hour dip.
Yeah, I mean, and these are out today. I'm waiting for mine to arrive. You didn't order any because of the style isn't to your preference, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct.
But by next week, we'll have, you know, listeners alike, we'll all have experience with these and can you know, speak to the battery specs, the real-world usage.
Yeah, and Apple tried to address some of the consternation about people that don't like the in-ear design because they say these have, like, special vents inside the ear to try and have airflow, so you don't get the sensation of them kind of just like closing off your ear entirely, which is
still
a sensation.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. For me, though, that's not my like primary concern about in-ear design. I just kind of just don't like how they fit. They just feel uncomfortable to me in general, mm-hmm. and I'm not so confident that these would be any different in that regard. Plus, I'm happy enough with my second generation AirPods in your ear, I'm just kind of carrying on for the time being.
Yeah, yeah. So if it, for people who had the first generation AirPods after, you know, almost 3 years, so after 2 years, you would notice a pretty big hit on the battery life going from 5 to like 2.5 if you use them every day, you know, for extended periods of time like we did. So then in March, I think people like you and me, it was warranted to purchase the new AirPods, even if they weren't dramatically different. Just so that you enjoy the product. You don't want to buy the same thing over again. But if there's a new S version of that, you know, revision version of that, then you buy it because you know you're going to like it. This is different because you might not like it and it might not be to your preference.
And noise cancellation is great to have. Like it's an impressive feature of them to have. And mm-hmm. the early hands-on seem to suggest that it does actually work very well.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I just don't. Like the places where I use AirPods is mostly when I'm walking places, and I like being able to hear the world around me. Like I think it's kind of weird if you're like walking next to a road and you can't hear the cars very well. So I would like that's why I'm just kind of happy at the moment with my second gen AirPods. I don't fly and stuff, and that's a big reason. And that's a big reason why people like these things. I don't go on the train and stuff like that. So the general noise cancellation target market isn't really me. So that's why I'm happy with second gen. But it is. A true surprise that they actually fit those in here.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, hearing the world around you, they do have the transparency feature where it feeds audio in from the microphones on the AirPods Pro, and then you can hear what's around you. The opposite of noise cancellation, it's like you hear your music or podcast or just nothing, and then you also hear through the you know headphones the sound around you, which has like a microphone effect to it. It isn't natural, like just having nothing in your ears would be. But from my experience using those with the Zillow Pro, it's really good. But it's not the same as just on ear earbuds that just sit in your ears and don't make a vacuum suction. Because you hear through the microphone, and so if it's far away, someone's shouting at you, you might not hear it in the same way that if they were like right in front of you speaking softly, you would hear that. That was just my experience with the Zillow Pro. So I imagine these are the same ways. It's useful for like, I can imagine it being useful like if someone's behind you shouting, you know, excuse me, then you hear that. But like if it's a car in the distance, you might not hear it until it's right on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the kind of like design changes here that I really hope comes to a future revision of the normal AirPods is the new stems. So not only are the stems shorter, like by a decent margin, they're also now swapped out the double tap gesture for what they call is a force sensor in the stem. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially simulating a button press, right? So on the old AirPods, you'd have to double tap the buds to activate the action gesture on either left or right ear. And that involved you like pushing the AirPods further into your skull, right? Because you'd have to like tap like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the force sensor, it's basically simulating the inline buttons on the old like wired earbuds, because you just kind of pinch it with both fingers on either side and click it, essentially, even though it doesn't physically click. They play a noise and then, you know, simulated clicks. And so that, I think, is actually a really big user improvement, because when you pinch on the stems, you're not pushing the buds further into your ears every single time, which kind of, you know, is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And they're not going to feel like wobbling around, because you're essentially stabilizing the buds with both fingers. So that's a big upgrade. And I sure hope that they, whenever they do revise the, you know, normal generation of AirPods, that force sensor stuff replaces the double tap.
Yeah. I've seen people compare this to force touch and 3D touch. So force touch on the watch, a 3D touch on the iPhones. not really, because it's, yeah. I think it's more like, didn't the AirPods debut alongside the iPhone 7 and 7 Plus? And that was yes. the first model with...
Yeah, because the iPhone 7 didn't have headphone jack.
Right, and that was the first model with not a physical home button. It was this, like, mm-hmm. it was the fake home button. And this is, like, a fake click button on the pod. So it's like the AirPods have finally caught up with the phone they were shown with. You know, I think that's a closer equivalent is the home button on an iPhone 7 versus, like, pressure sensitivity on a screen.
Yeah, because it's not going to be, like... the Apple Watch, which is force touch, with what they even name it, because that's you're kind of like pushing. It's almost like you're pushing through mm-hmm. the screen.
Yeah,
but that's just not what this is. It's essentially just like a button. It basically because they're so small, they can't put an actual button there, so they're just simulating a button click.
Yeah. Do you feel a click though? I don't think you don't.
They don't make a. There's no like haptic response. Right. But they do make a sound, and they make a sound in the ear that you click on. So it.
Clever.
Yeah, it stimulates it.
Clever, yeah. But so very similar to the trackpad, you know, on Macs and, or on, with the iMac and those home button phones like the new SE 2 coming. Yeah. I'd imagine. No black, just white. There was this late last minute rumor that there would be black and midnight green, which is just like, wow, two colors, two more colors, you know. But no, just white. And you kind of get it, like, okay, it's the iconic look of, like, the old iPod, you know, earbuds, AirPods white, AirPods Pro white. But they do dark colors for Pro and so many reasons for, like, marketing reasons. And they could have done that here. And then...
Yeah, like the AirPods are so popular.
Yeah.
They don't need to rely on an iconic color branding to keep them popular.
We know they're AirPods, right?
Yeah. Like, in the... You know, maybe in the early days of the iPod, that was really important. But, you know, Apple's a big enough company now that you can have white AirPods, you can have black AirPods. Everyone's still going to know that they're AirPods at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was true of the original AirPods and second generation AirPods, but that if they're black, then you can sort of hide part of the flaw of the design, which is that you've got to have this sensor for proximity. And in this case, you've got proximity plus kind of the ventilation area, so those two mm-hmm. things would blend much better if you had black, you know.
Yeah, because like the little black window essentially on them is much bigger than the equivalent window on the first gen AirPods. Mm-hmm. It's like a continuous stripe essentially on the side.
Yeah,
and if it was black and not white plastic, it'd be more integrated.
Yeah, and the original AirPods get disgusting, like totally. You know, just wear them a few times and they get really gross. If you look at them really closely, it's really bad, especially in the inside, like where it gets caked up. It's gross. But these are like the white earbud tips, and I don't know. I think I've had white ear tips before with Power Beats that were like just sample units given before from Beats, but they didn't hold up very well in terms of being white and pristine looking. They quickly became yellow. So I wonder if that'll be one of the first gates that we have is that the tips, you know, you get three sizes, but really only one size is for you. And then you've got to replace them, which is not expensive from what we've seen, right? But it will be a thing because
they're $4. $4. Apple's selling replacement for $4. And there's nothing proprietary about the design of the tips, so yeah. There will be 99 cent ones on Amazon immediately.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things where it's, you know, the if you were being practical, you wouldn't make these white, the tip parts at least, like even if the outside parts that are not really shown in your ears were I don't like that. But a bottom,
yeah,
you
mean,
know,
you could, like even with white buds, you could make the tips black,
right?
It would match like the sensor bits.
Yes, you get the yes. So, but no. But I, based on using the Solo Pros for the past couple of weeks, you know, I've had that for noise cancellation and transparency, those two features, and these are both there. It's like, whoa, you can, you know, in part of my review, like I was writing the final touches of my review on the morning that these were announced, and I had to go back and revise, you know, where I said like transparency is only on Beats and I wished it was everywhere, and put like, oh, surprise, and now it's on AirPods as well, you know, but.
Yeah, and in general, compelling. People are saying that they do have slightly better like sound quality. Apple
sure.
says they've got new like adaptive EQ stuff and a better audio engine inside. A lot of the improvements to sound quality though are just going to be from the fact that the buds just sit further down your ear and make a
yeah,
seal.
Yeah, you like, can get a good seal.
If you take your AirPods now and mm-hmm. you shove them down your ear, they sound a lot better than when they're just like resting on the outside.
Yeah, there's better sound coming out of the speaker than what reaches your ear. And with these, you'll be they'll reach your ear by design. Price $250, right? $249.
Yeah, $249.
Which is the same price as Powerbeats Pro, except right now they're on sale for $199. Like officially from Apple and Beats. It's not just like third parties. So same price, except Beats are on sale for a little while, down to $199. But very similar, I mean, in terms of features. And you don't get Powerbeats Pro, you don't get noise cancellation. You just get the fact that there's this in your ear seal and you can turn the volume up. And that's very useful. You can use a lower volume than you would with regular AirPods because you don't need to drown out as much sound around you if that's what you're going for. But with these, you'll actually get noise cancellation. You can do a lower volume. Not to crank it up as high, maybe, and we know that gives you a half an hour battery cut to the total battery life, but maybe it'll balance out and be okay. But then 4.5 hours with the AirPods Pro versus 9 hours, so twice that with Powerbeats Pro, and the difference there, I guess, is just the size of each one. You know, Powerbeats Pro by design are much bigger. Not to mention the ear clip around there. Both have the same water resistance rating, right? Where it's, what is it, IP4X or whatever you call it, where it's splash, it's sweat resistant and meant for active use. So, but you know, with the original AirPods, like I've ran in the rain so many times. I know people who have had issues with them and had to have them replaced, but for me, I would run in like pouring down rain and not have a problem. Yeah.
Yeah, and these aren't, I walked around in the rain or whatever and they've been fine. I've never had AirPods break. I've never had AirPods break full stop and I've never lost either lucky or just they're just normal usage. I did have the battery degrade. That's just natural, but the battery does unfortunately degrade and there's no clear technology on the horizon that's going to change that, unfortunately. But,
yeah, no, I do wonder about the battery situation though. Like, because in the first AirPods, and we'll probably need to tear down to sort of figure all this out, I guess, but in the first AirPods, the stem was where you shoved the battery. And they've shortened the stem. And if you like with Beats headphones, I leave on the noise cancellation. I never use it without. I like it. I don't imagine I'll ever use these without noise cancellation or transparency, one of those two things. So effectively, it's 4.5 hours of battery life. I wonder if they had the same length stems as the first generation AirPods, if then they would have had 5 hours or 5.5 hours or whatever, you know, whatever, and turn off those features, then you get six or something like that would have been possible.
Yeah, we have to see the teardown to see what the exact like capacity of the battery is, because each bud is slightly heavier than the old AirPods are. Mm-hmm. Part of that might just be the tips, and part of it might just be that they actually have a bigger battery. Maybe they've gone for a fatter battery in width or something. We have to wait for the teardown to fully see what's going on there.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to try these. I mean, I have a video camera on the front porch that's HomeKit. And so on my Mac, as we record, I can watch the front porch where the UPS man will come or woman, and I will see it there as these are delivered. So I'm a little bit anxious about that. And then, like you mentioned, I did publish my Beats Solo Pro review. So we discussed those last week or so. Now you can see the full piece. And big takeaway there for me was that, of course, I love Lightning versus micro USB. I wish it was USB-C instead, so then it's the same as my Mac and iPad, but oh well. And then the noise cancellation on that size headphone is good to have. On Studio, it's $50 more. But actually, the difference in the sound quality of on-ear versus over-ear is just so much different that right now, I prefer the Studios for their price and features. And then once the Studios, like if those get replaced with Studio Pros that cost $400 or so, then it'll be a different equation. But right now, if I'm buying off the shelf for myself for my needs, then it would be Studio versus the Solo Pros. Not that there's any faults with the Solo Pros, besides the fact that my head is wide enough that when I wear them at their full length, they're still too small to be comfortable after longer than an hour or so. Check out the review if you're curious.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a really nice addition to the AirPods lineup, and it's not going to be for everyone, but there are like a subset of people that just couldn't wear the first AirPods at all, but they like the AirPods experience. They were just they would just fall out too much. They couldn't use them, and these AirPods Pro definitely help fill in those gaps on the bigger and smaller sizes in terms of like ear canal shapes. So even if you're not interested in any of the you know, if you're not interested in in-ear, but you're like, oh, I just wanted AirPods of any size and they just didn't fit before, now you've got a good shot of them fitting. And it's perfectly fine to have an AirPods lineup of the buds and then the in-ear versions. It does feel a bit stingy that the AirPods with non-wireless charging case are still a thing. Like, that's $159, then you have the $199 wireless ones, and then the $250 thingies. That does make the lineup feel a little penny-pinching bloated, but overall, a good addition to the lineup, and, you know, the AirPods are selling like crazy no matter what, so they don't really have any motivation to get rid of that upsell anytime soon, unfortunately.
Yep, yeah. Yeah, I mean, $250, it's funny, it's like, at $159, I was willing to buy. I liked the product enough that I would have paid more for the same thing, and they basically gave us that with the second generation AirPods. You get the same thing, but if you pay for the wireless case, you do pay more. And then now it's even further. So, but I think it's people seem excited by these. I mean, I was excited. I'm glad they are here now. Mm. Would have been a really cool part of the missing fourth of the keynote in September, where it's like, okay, we're an hour and a half in, bye.
Yeah, it's kind of weird they didn't preview them when they're only a month out. Yeah. Like, surely they must have known they're almost ready to go a month ago. And they even like match the iPhone 11 Pro in terms of the accessories, because they come with Lightning to USB-C cables and stuff. So they're like perfect complement for it as, you know, one more thing type announcement. But for whatever reason, they were like, no, we're just going to keep quiet on these for a little bit.
Yeah. So, and the only Beats that were on stage were the Beats X, and there was like a slide, right, around the AirPods, part of the AirPods event.
Yeah.
And those got delayed too.
Yeah, I think they previewed the Solos as well, but there was literally it was like a slide where they were talking about the W1 chip.
Yeah.
And they were like, W1 coming to Solos, Power Beats, and the new Beats X. That was kind of the gist.
Yeah. So it's not out of the ordinary for Solo Pro just to be a press release, but it would have been a perfectly normal part of the event if it were there. And we also knew that those things were coming, so it wasn't like they were not almost done. All right. Let's talk about the MacBook Pro, the 16-inch rumored version. Because as we prepared the show today, it was just going to be a mention that it doesn't seem like there's any movement on that this week, you know, and this month's effectively over. So I guess it's not an October thing. But then 9to5 Mexki Rambo found not just a render of what like the icon for this will look like for like a display setting, but here is the face on view of the top right part of the keyboard where the Touch ID sensor is, and the speaker and the touch bar turned off, and the keyboard style and the speaker width and the color and all. And it looks, I mean, it matches up with what we saw last time we mentioned this, where we had the icon. It's like a bigger version of the 16-inch MacBook Pro. Nothing crazy about it. There's a difference here with the touch bar and the Touch ID sensor, but it's what's rumored. This is still coming, it looks like. It's being worked on more and more in terms of like the assets becoming part of macOS that's reaching customers or at least being tested. What do you make of this?
Yeah, we could kind of infer the touch bar design change from the picture from last time when it was at the other angle, because you could see the little divot where on the left-hand side there was the physical escape key, right? And then it was going to be pretty obvious that they would mirror that symmetrically on the right-hand side for the power button as well. Although it does just give a more fuller look at the top of the laptop, and you'd be hard-pressed to notice any direct change again. So it's more of the same what we saw last week, I think, and it definitely seems like a product that is coming out before the end of the year.
Yeah.
And perfectly suited to a press release style release. I mean,
bigger version of the 15-inch, probably higher end in size. The Touch ID is a separate key, so it's symmetrical with the physical escape key that we believe is on the other side. What's very curious is that like, the keyboard style, I mean, you wouldn't look at that and say, oh, they changed the keys this time. But there's also...
Yeah, the width between the keys is the same. They're still like the bigger sizes.
Yeah.
If you didn't see... If you saw with the number rows, you wouldn't be able to tell it apart from Butterfly on the render, obviously. So. Yeah.
Which, by the way, like if they make the keyboard the way it looks and everything and the way it feels, but reliable, then I'm okay with that. I didn't have a problem with the
original. Yeah, me and you are definitely not in the camp of people who have been like campaigning for a different keyboard style. It's just the reliability situation.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, until there's a failure, then it's an issue. But that's why I think in the days of the 12-inch MacBook, I had no problems because it took a while for those things to accumulate. And now I'm typing in double I's left and right, and some of them get out. So. And you finally graduated to like keys popping off, right?
Oh yeah, this week I had both the I and the O key. The keycaps literally just came up. I like strike down my finger, and then they literally just rose up with my finger. I was like, "What the heck is going on here?" I think like the glue or whatever holds them in is just completely gone, and they wobble around. And
now go back and watch go back and watch the video where Schiller shows the comparison of typing in slow motion up close.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. I literally hit I, it flew off my finger, and then I was like, okay. And then I hit O in the same like flow of the sentence, and then they both came up. I just had like a massive gap on my keyboard. I'm like, oh dear. So I just kind of like put them in place and then banged them a bit, and they've seemed to have gone back down for the time being.
It's like you lose a tooth and you just put it right back in your mouth.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't very reassuring. Mine's the 2016 keyboard, and I haven't used the service program yet to get it quote unquote fixed.
Right.
I would do that, but I don't have a spare Mac, so it's kind of just like
as we discussed before, it would be replaced with the same generation. It wouldn't be replaced with a newer version.
Yeah. If they had said you can go from the first gen to the third gen, I would have done it already.
Yeah.
Because it's just going from first to first. It's like, well, you know, what difference am I going to have?
Yeah. And based on this image that we published from Guy Rambo today on 95 Mac, you know, I've seen some people think, it's a reasonable question, because it looks the same, will it be possible to replace any of the butterfly switch keyboards with this new, if it's a scissor switch keyboard, remember, this new keyboard for reliability? And what we've seen in the past is that the second gen couldn't be replaced with the first gen, or the first gen couldn't be replaced with the second gen. The second gen couldn't be replaced with the third gen. And then the third gen had a second revision. So it was like 3A and 3B, and B could replace A, you know, but you couldn't jump generations. And so probably like not at all for you know, fourth generation, whatever you want to call it, to this. So I wouldn't hold out hope for that. And then also in Mac news this week, there's tiny movement on the Mac Pro, which is revealed at WWDC in June alongside the Apple Pro Display XDR to be released sometime in 2019, by the end of the year, I think is what the official line is from Apple on that. Now it gets FCC approval, and that means soon, maybe?
Yeah, well, normally stuff hits the FCC as it's officially announced most of the time.
Yeah, like AirPods this week.
Yeah, like AirPods, literally, it was like, you know, at the same time it's coordinated to do it. Sometimes there are weird things where it's like half an hour before, so when they hit the FCC today, I like quickly got the post up and like in preparation for the official announcement.
Now you can configure your Mac Pro
at normal time, but it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a weird situation where it did hit the FCC but isn't thing. I mean, there is, Apple is less careful when they've already announced the product.
Mm-hmm.
So they did already announce it at WWDC in June. So the fact that the embargo for the FCC is not dead on maybe is not too much of a surprise. They've definitely had it before in situations like that,
mm-hmm.
but it's still a bit weird that it went up today out of all times and there was no official announcement of any kind.
Yeah, and while we're talking about hardware for now, there was this one report this week from Digitime. So not the level of like Ming-Chi Kuo analyst report, but the news in it at least is optimistic, and that is that the iPhone next year could be the first to feature ProMotion, like the really good refresh rate that iPad Pros have. Is that right?
Yeah. So that'd be 120 hertz. And it would be obviously an OLED because all the iPhones next year are going to OLED displays. There is an Android phone out today that does have a 120 hertz panel. Although I think it's like for battery life reasons, it doesn't always run at 120. So it's a bit of a, you know, it works in some games and not others. So the technology's around and it would be nice if it comes to the iPhones next year. Obviously, it is just, you know, some Digitimes murmuring at this point,
right.
But I'd welcome it, but I don't want to like set my heart on it too much at the moment.
Right. Right. We just can't say we haven't heard this at all yet. Now it's somewhere.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how the battery life situation moves into 2020, because mm-hmm. obviously they've made a big statement this year with having the battery life so good. And next year they're going to have 5G to worry about. They might have a 120 hertz screen to worry about as well. So, you know, it's more of a challenge to maintain the same stellar battery life statistics.
Yeah, and they've still got matching to do with what Android does with some OLED phones where you've got a version of always on, you know, similar to the Apple Watch now. And so that's going from like a 60 hertz to 1 hertz. And
there was actually a rumor last week where they were saying that the iPhone was going to adopt LTPO screens, mm-hmm. which is what the Apple Watch Series 5 uses, where it can have the dynamic refresh rate to mm-hmm. go up and down. So, you know, maybe that's destined for the phone as well. So maybe that can also help with the 120 hertz situation where it doesn't have to be running at 120 hertz all the time. It could be running at a lower refresh rate to conserve power.
Exactly.
And then when you're actually doing scrolling, it can ramp it up.
Like maybe you don't – what that means is that you don't get what you get on the watch with always on because they don't see the utility in that for some reason. But that they do use that to bring true motion, ProMotion from the iPad to the iPhone Pro. Yeah, makes sense. And this week with software, we got a bunch of new releases of things that have been in beta for the past few weeks. They're finally out now. I'll jump around a little bit here. So with watchOS 6.1, this has been in beta. This is the first version now that it's actually out that brings watchOS 6 at all to the Apple Watch Series 1 and Series 2. And I've only seen a few mentions of what that's like running there, but it seems like it's okay. So if you're hesitant, I can't offer advice, but you know, look at watchOS 6, what you get, like voice memos app and some other things, and you know, decide for yourself if it's worth it. This is also the software update for the Apple Watch that has fixed my Series 5 battery life, and I did go from the beta version to the new build release version, and it also includes support for AirPods Pro and Beats Solo Pro, so there's some optimizations made there. But so far, I'm perfectly happy with battery life on the Series 5 watch. And this weekend I'll be going to Disney World for a day at the park and then the next day for the half marathon run. And so those are going to be two very good days to test Apple Watch battery life, you know. By next week I'll have a, you know, a final kind of feel for what is Series 5 battery life like. But right now with turning on everything, it's really good. So I'm happy there. iOS 13.2, what's new there, Mayo?
Yeah, so we did talk about 13.2 features before when it was in beta and stuff, and obviously that stuff has come out. You've got the Siri privacy options, you've got the Deep Fusion, you've got HomeKit support for routers, routers, however you want to say it, iCloud secure video recording is apparently in the releases now, though obviously we're waiting on accessories to come out that actually support it. In the camera app, they shipped the selector for the video toggle for iPhone 11 only with the kind of awkward UI, which is a bit sad. Announced message with Siri is finally out. And you've got the emoji update.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Deep Fusion, you know, we got to play with that in the beta period when they said this is included. For me, I'm very big on like iPhone photography and taking lots of pictures every day. It's one of those things where if there's like some sort of an indicator that this is turned like active right now, not just turned on, but like this picture is one of those, and then turn it off and do a comparison, then maybe I'd be more excited about it. But just having to kind of go on faith that if you turn off capture outside frame, then you might get a Deep Fusion picture, you know, that uses that approach, then. Right now what I'm doing is I basically decided I didn't see like any crazy improvements. Like all the pictures I've been taking, I feel like for me are very, very good in what I'm looking for. And I didn't achieve some like next level, like quality and like taking pictures of the kids and the dogs. But, with capture outside frame, that's a feature that is, I can kind of point to, this is what it's doing. And so I've decided.
Yeah, and you actually get utility out of it.
Right. So I just wanted to turn that back on and use that. And so that's what I'm doing. You know, maybe one day there'll be a way to do it both. One person on Twitter told me that they talked to Apple support and they showed me the screenshot of it. And they said you can use both now. And that's one of those classic examples where support isn't lying. They just don't know. And
support
getting what you
they
believe.
Do a lot of the time they do like a best guess of what the truth is,
what makes sense without,
yeah. I'm running with Deep Fusion on, i.e. capture outside the frame off at the moment, uh-huh. but I do agree you don't see a massive difference
well really. and even that so, I can't pinpoint the difference. Like,
I feel like there is actually a problem where it's like the preview in the camera app where you see the data from the wider camera in the kind of like toolbar areas of the camera app.
Yes,
that preview still shows when you have capture outside the frame turned off. So it's kind of awkward because, like, in my head, it's, you kind of see a picture where you can take, it's still in the frame, even though it's not. If you, it, you know, it's,
I don't know if it's a bug or if it's decoration or what.
Yeah, it's definitely awkward because, at least on the old way, if you were using those toolbar areas to frame your shot, it was like, oh, it's fine. I can just go and get it back in using capture outside the frame data. Whereas now, it feels like if capture outside the frame is turned off, the preview should be turned off as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I would expect, and I'm glad you articulated that because I've experienced that, but I've not nailed it down, and it's good to know that that's a shipping behavior, and it's not supposed to, it doesn't make sense that way, at least.
Yeah, so for the time being, I've had Deep Fusion on, i.e. capture it off, but I might change it back in the future too, because...
you could be convinced.
Yeah, at the moment, it's just kind of like faith. It's like, I know I'm getting the best picture quality this way, but I can't tangibly look at a phone and be like, this is so much better than how it was before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And then for the HomeKit secure video stuff, like you mentioned, it's now in the software. And this happens a lot of times where it's a part of, you know, the whatever number feature, and then it's actually a part of the point feature in terms of HomeKit supporting it. And then eventually you start getting the manufacturers adopting it. And
eventually, sometimes meaning years later.
Years or never, right? And so in HomeKit parlance. But in this case, there are at least, you know, companies that ship products that work with HomeKit well, that have made the promise of by this year. And you know, you can often ignore the timing, just say, okay, they do plan to support it if they can. And so I've got three or four Logitech Circle 2 cameras that work with HomeKit, and I use those around the home, and they say that those will work with HomeKit secure video by the end of the year. So it's one of those things where you just kind of have to wait and see, but if they do, then I'll be ahead of the game with four of those, and then it's going to be one of those things where whoever's first, that's who gets money thrown at them, you know, in terms of the HomeKit enthusiast crowd, because it's a really compelling feature where you just take your existing 200 or 2 terabyte iCloud storage amount that you're already paying for, and then suddenly you can start using saved video in the home app whenever a human is detected, you know, or someone's detected, emotion's detected, and it uses the Apple TV or the HomePod, right, to process that it's a person or so.
Yeah, and it's stored end-to-end encrypted too, so
yes,
Apple can't see your video either.
Yeah, that's useful. So whoever does that first will be a hero. It's also one of those things where, you know, with like Natatmo, we mentioned them last week or so, where with the weather station, that they are rolling out support, but even inside the app, we both got our weather stations to try out. It's not there yet as a firmware update, but they've got like the news alert that says sometime this month or over the next month, it will be there. This is how it goes with like these firmware updates, but I'm hoping it's not like that with the HomeKit secure video, so that it's more definitive.
HomeKit fanatics get used to waiting.
Oh, totally. And nothing exists until it ships, you know.
That is definitely the name of the game.
Yeah. Now, speaking of HomeKit, not HomeKit specific, but related, the HomePod had its first software update this year. Well, for the 13, iOS 13 season, it missed 13.0 and 13.1, but 13.2 is the first software update for it from whatever version of 12 it was on. And this brings support for Handoff, for example, where you're playing music, a song with Apple Music on your iPhone or a podcast, or you're on a phone call and you walk in your house and you wave your phone over the AirPod and there's like a little banner that pops up and you can transfer what you're listening to the HomePod. This worked well for me. Mayo, you did not have success with it?
Nope. And I still haven't the day after either.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
I don't know why. I've been waving it around. I've been holding it really close. One time I thought I'd got it, but I accidentally just tapped the top of the
HomePod
and just started playing what it was playing before.
Yeah.
I don't know why it doesn't work, but it doesn't work.
I'm going to blame your wonky Wi-Fi network situation that you've got going on. Ambient sounds. This is something that was mentioned that you spotted in one of the newsroom releases on HomePod's updates. Wasn't part of like a keynote, you know, WWDC, for example, but they mentioned it in a newsroom release, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah, it was, and it was on, they did a update to the
HomePod page.
Apple.com/HomePod like feature page, yeah, over the summer, where they just started like listing stuff that was coming later, and that was on there as well.
Yeah. So my take on ambient sounds is this. Like, if you have Apple Music, which you probably have if you have a HomePod, then you could always call up things like ocean sounds, thunder sounds, yeah, you know, because those are soundtracks on Apple Music from publishers, you know. Now it's part of the system where, like, there's like tracks that are, I guess, preloaded into the HomePod, so maybe they're not even using it in your internet. But it's weird because even in the release notes, they say like X, Y, and Z and more, and they don't give you like the definitive list of what you can call up. And if you're not looking at the website or the release notes, then you don't even know it's there. And I tried doing things like asking Siri on the HomePod what's new, or like what can you do new, you know, that kind of thing. Just trying to find out, like, how does a customer figure out that this is there without reading the release notes in the home app? You know, if it's auto updating, how do they know it's here now? And I can't find a way. And even if you're plugged in like we are and you're reading 9to5Mac or you're writing 9to5Mac, then you know that there are things like ocean sounds and forest and bird, you know, birds are part of the forest. So there's things like that that you can ask for. But they always end it with "and more," and it's like, so what is more? And it was only because, well, how did we do this? I mean, we were able to see in the code what the actual.
Yeah, so Rambo found it in the code.
Yeah,
but there is technically a way that you can make it come up, but it's really hacky.
Okay.
So the way, if you're a random customer, you could theoretically do it by asking it to play ambient sounds,
uh-huh,
right?
Oh,
and it will play. And it will play one sound,
yeah.
And then on your iPhone, if you do the next track, yeah, it cycles through all the different ones.
It's terrible.
So theoretically, you can collect a list that way.
Yeah, 3D Touch is more discoverable than that.
Yeah, it is a bit stupid that, because the HomePod has setup screens,
yeah,
for stuff like the multiple users,
uh-huh,
oh, and even like a handoff there in the tips. But they probably could just have a one screen that's just like, and now you can get white noise. And then just have a list of, or just have like an animation where it just cycles through different things you can ask.
Yeah, one of the ones that I didn't know about was Fireplace, I think. And
yeah,
and that one was weird too, because when I did do Fireplace, it was so quiet compared to the other ones. I didn't know it worked. And then I started hearing like the wood crackling and everything. It was really cool. I like all these are really cool.
Yeah, so it's white noise, stream, rain, ocean, night, forest and fireplace. That's currently, yep, your option.
And they've got
and
some.
What does distinguish them a little bit from the Apple Music playlists is that they loop continuously, mm-hmm, whereas the Apple Music playlists would at some point end, whereas these just keep going and going and going. And obviously, they're only like 15 minutes long or whatever, and they just repeat themselves. But it automatically loops continuously. You don't have to turn on a repeat or anything.
Yeah, like a bedtime thunderstorm soundtrack on Apple Music that would be like a CD that you buy in the store or digital download on iTunes that's part of your music subscription. Those will often have, like, you can put it on repeat, but you'll hear big breaks in between the song, you know, the song titles when they change over the tracks. Like, just you look at the description and we can tell, oh, that changed to this next track. And these are more pleasant, like, it's, you know, they're more polished. So I like that about them. There seems to be some pretty good support for, like, you know, whatever the track is called, you know, forest, you can say birds and it knows that. So I imagine that there's got some vocabulary for what, you know, you can request to get to each one. The code seems to be, say, sounds to get these, and then it will say playing whatever from ambient sounds, and that's how you know it's coming from this and not Apple Music. But it works well. And there's also the surprise feature for sleep timer that's included.
Yeah, that was nice. That was something they hadn't mentioned anywhere. And you can just say stop playing after 10 minutes, an hour, or you can say set sleep timer for X minutes. And it works just like the clock app on your iPhone does, where whatever's playing, once the timer runs out, it just stops and just fades it out. So if you're going to bed and you want to run some music for half an hour, you can just run your audiobook or run a playlist or run, you know, some white noise and just have the HomePod automatically shut up afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was just something you couldn't do before.
Yeah. You still can't say wake me up to whatever song, but you can go to sleep a little better now. And then all this to say that, like, I had no issue updating my HomePods, and I've got three in the home, and so I did the update all thing and it works remotely, so you can be out of the home and have it still work. But people were experiencing that their HomePod would become like it would just get stuck on the update and it would break afterwards, and there would be no like you couldn't use it. And then after that, Apple pulled the update, and this is the update that's been kind of in waiting for probably targeted the beginning of September, and now it's we're getting into November, and they just now got to release it. And they pulled it, and they had a whole support document on what to do if you brick your HomePod by trying to update it this year. It's really can't say anything good about that. I'm glad I got to get in on the update with no problem, but man, that's got to be frustrating to wait all this time. You know, if you're excited about these new features, and then it happens, and then you gotta reset it, and then you're back on before the update, with none of the new features.
Well, or you have to go to Apple support.
Yeah, that's true.
Like if you get bricked, you can't plug it in or anything. There's no ports on it, so you have to get a device swap. So it's a real pain. If only Apple had some sort of beta program where they could find out these bugs over the summer for willing participants, not general customers. But
and then things like reminders could sync well between beta versions,
and obviously this update does bring the multiple user voice profile stuff. Yeah. But neither me or you have had a chance to check that out properly, so we'll probably do an update on that at some point on a future episode.
It's been a couple of days, and so in my home it required my wife to be on 13.2 update, and she wasn't yet, so we haven't got to try it.
Getting your family to do stuff is a different matter than you doing something on your own.
right yeah.
Plus with mine, I have my HomePods in a stereo pair in my office, and obviously now that it supports multiple voice profiles, it makes more sense to put one inside, but I almost want to know if it works well first before I bother to do it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I've been kind of like half on the fence about it, because I have heard some earlier reports where it was a bit buggy and a bit glitchy, and at least the setup was unintuitive. But maybe once you've actually registered everybody's voices, then it's fine. But yeah, hopefully it's a good feature, and if it does work well, then that's a big checkbox off the catching up to Amazon Alexa and Google Home.
Yeah, so I never bothered with voice profiles on Amazon Alexa or Google Home, because even though I had those in the home to test out, I never got that far into it. But with HomePod, we definitely will. With HomeKit, we definitely will, because there's good utility and having two sets of reminders lists based on your voice, or your music, having your own music library based on your voice. And in my home, it will be me and my voice, which is distinctive from my wife's voice, which is distinctive from my daughter's voice. And then our son is learning to talk. So like, we'll see how that goes. maybe by the time he can speak, clearly that this will be worked out. But that's the HomePod update. There's also a few other things that are pretty notable in these updates that were leaks that Guy Rimba found, aside from the big MacBook Pro hardware leak, and that is the an actual like look at the smart battery case for iPhone 11, 11 Pro, and 11 Pro Max, not just an icon for it. Just to further suggest that maybe 13.2 supports that, and it should be, it could be ready soon. And looks just like you'd expect, where it's got the big battery in the back and it's got a big cutout for the camera. No surprises there this year. And then also a possible product name for those tile-like tracker accessories that we've been following. The name AirTag is new in this version. It's something that he discovered. So maybe we'll calling them tile-like trackers, and we can say AirTag in the future.
AirTag.
You're it.
I'm surprised they didn't go with like Apple Tag. Feels like it rolls off the tongue a bit better, but Apple are naming, they'll always surprise us.
Also, now we're on the eve of Apple TV Plus launching. Well, I guess we're getting closer. So we're recording on Wednesday, and it launches on Friday. So we've got one day between us. But as you listen, maybe it's already out, or maybe it's out tomorrow. So there's been some stuff happening this week. So one's pretty easy, which is that there's now a bundle for Apple Music and Apple TV if you are in college, right? And that's the $4.99 a month plan for Apple Music will include.
Yes, if you're on the TV student Plus. Apple Music plan.
Yeah. So that's a thing. Nothing for just out of the anyone yet. Although a lot of people have TV Plus for free for the first year anyway by buying a qualifying device. And then also the critics have reviewed some of the early shows, at least what they've seen so far. And Mayo, you've been paying great attention to that. So what's your take on what you've seen so far?
Yeah, the the first round of reviews, I don't think they were quite they weren't quite meeting what I think Apple thought they were going to get. Like, especially for stuff their hero shows like The Morning Show, they were doing all these press tours, and they even set up like special events at the Variety offices. Right, they had all the celebrities come there, and they had little chats with the producers and stuff, and they did all the big splashy premieres, and they timed the embargo so the reviews came out on Monday morning, and then Monday evening they did the Morning Show premiere in New York, like a big splashy event. I think they thought they were going to get better reception than they did, because I would say that For All Mankind got mostly positive reviews. Dickinson got generally positive reviews, or some people were very confused by what they were going for, which is kind of understandable because it's a very divisive concept of doing like the old story but with modern music and modern language, so I can understand why that one is like controversial. And then they're like high budget Morning Show kind of was basically like mediocre. Like, people were like, it's all right, but it's not the greatest, and it doesn't attack like issues like Me Too and stuff in a big enough way. Although there was some inclination that maybe after the third episode it will pick up and get a bit better, because the reviewers only got to see the first three episodes, so they don't actually know what the full season will look like yet. Yeah. So maybe it does actually improve. And some people, there were definitely some comments in the reviews where it was like, the first episode was all right, the second episode was very slow, and then the third episode started to pick up a bit, so maybe the storyline will come together a bit more. But the initial at the gate opinion was, you know, pretty meddling. And then almost everyone hated C. People just said there was almost too much violence and not enough plot. Like, it's kind of funny how in the run-up to all of this stuff, we kept hearing about, you know, Apple, the rumors about Apple intervening, not having loads of violence or sexual content or anything like that. And then all these reviews are basically like, C is 90% battles and blood and violence and fighting, and 10% talking and content. And it just didn't seem like it held up, really. It just, mm-hmm. People were basically just complaining that basically nothing happened apart from Jason Momoa fighting loads of people.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where I don't know how reviews fit into what shows you watch or which movies you choose to watch and spend time with. But for all of the TV Plus stuff, I mean, it is interesting that, like, you know, Apple positively hoped for more positive reviews. But for me, like, reading the reviews is more effort than just watching the shows. And because it's part of the free trial from buying an iPhone this year, it's really low effort to just try out some of this stuff myself. So,
I mean, who knows? Loads of people watch shows that get critically reviewed terribly, and people enjoy the shows, and the opposite happens as well. Obviously, we'll have to give our own opinions and stuff and actually look at these things. And, you know, TV in general is so much more subjective than even like iPhone reviews are, right? Because people have different tastes, people have different mm-hmm. likes. But there was, especially for C, a big consensus from the TV critics that like this thing is just not very good. Time magazine, their comment was, not to put it too finely, but C is one of the worst TV series I've seen in years. Oh. And when you go to apple.com, it says stories to believe in, and it's a big picture of Baba Voss and Jason Momoa behind it, so it's a bit awkward. And in fact, New York Times had a good thing. Apparently, in the Morning Show premiere, they asked Lichtenberg, you know, like the Apple TV Plus chiefs who came from Sony, mm-hmm. they were like on stage talking to the press, and they asked them basically, what do they see as success for, you know, the start of the service? And they said, ultimately, numbers matter down the road, but, you know, out the gate, what we're looking for and what we'll be happy about is critically acclaimed, well-received, high-quality TV shows. And that was on the same day when, you know, 70% of the reviews were saying their top two shows were kind of bad.
Yeah. I actually say that for myself, with movies and TV shows, I've found that I will really enjoy a movie that's getting terrible reviews, and it's not just to be contrarian, but it's just however it sits with me. And then similar for TV shows, I guess less often for TV shows because I'm not exposed to as many TV show reviews, but I will just thoroughly enjoy something that someone else just thinks is like super boring or just, you know, not good TV. And then the same way, like if something's very popular, like it will take a lot for me to even try it out. So with TV Plus stuff, if these shows were on any other service, I don't know that there's any yet. Like For All Mankind, maybe because of the space thing, you know, it's interesting. It's got a cool pitch to it. But I can't say that if the morning show was on HBO or Showtime or something, I'm not sure that I can say for sure I wouldn't subscribe to it like, just for the show. I wouldn't say like, oh, it's Steve Carell. And then, you know, so I haven't thought about it in that way before, but because it's the Apple TV stuff and it's a new thing for the company, you know, of course we're going to dive into it. And,
yeah.
And you know, it's so like, no one's saying Planet of the Apps anymore. Like they get it now. Everyone gets it now that this is not that. This is a totally different effort.
It's almost like, especially with the, you know, gratuitous violence and swearing stuff.
Yes.
A big comment against the morning show was there was too much swearing. Like apparently people are just shouting around and swearing a lot. And they were saying there's almost too much profanity per minute of content. Like it's just a funny opposite of, you know, Apple exec intervening for family friendly. And it's like, well, you've got Jason Momoa putting swords in people left, right and center. And you've got, you know, Jennifer Aniston swearing constantly. And there were like two big negatives on the, you know, on the write-ups.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. In a matter of hours, we will get to experience this stuff for ourselves. So next week.
Yeah. As a summary, obviously in terms of customer response, the critics don't really care, right? Most people don't even know that TV critics have written this stuff, right? Like
right.
People are just happy to get their free year and watch some celebrities they recognize. For Apple, I definitely do think they were trying that this is a disappointment because the whole first year of TV Plus is trying to get awards recognition. It's trying to get Oscars. It's trying to get Emmys. And now with the launch shows, you know, not being well received for the next 6 months, every time, you know, a newspaper or a TV critic reviews another Apple TV show, it's always going to be like prefixed with after a lackluster launch. Now you've got Truth Be Told, and Truth Be Told is actually quite good. Do you know what I mean? Like there's going to be a while now where they're going to have to shed that image, even if every show after these first four is fantastic, which it, you know, not guaranteed to be, but let's say it was, there's still going to be a while now where it's just in people's minds of like TV Plus is kind of pointless. Like that was a lot of the commentary. It was just like, we don't understand what Apple's going for here. They don't, these shows aren't high quality like they were pitching them to. So they're going to have to do even more work now to kind of change perceptions than what they already had. Like they started at a baseline of zero. And now they're probably at a baseline like minus 20, and they've got to work out how to get back up to like the positive numbers again.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you have any feedback, you can send us a message. I'm on Twitter at Paulo Zach, same for Instagram. And Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
And you can also email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.